Thank you, Steve. All right. We have Dr. John Duffy on the show on a regular basis every other Wednesday. He's a clinical psychologist. He's written a book called The Available Parent, which is awesome because we all try to be the best parent we can be. He's a parenting and relationship expert and a certified life coach. So, John, let's talk about we all need some coaching. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to do some spring cleaning for the soul.
Let's do some spring cleaning. I like that idea. So one thing that hit me this week, and part of this was what was going on in my office, is people often come to my office feeling like stagnated, disempowered, like in their lives, their relationship, their careers, and they're not sure, like, what am I going to do to kickstart things? And in the end, what you find is that the reason that people failed to get where they want to go, even though they can envision it, they picture it, they've been dreaming of it for years, is they fail to set intentions and really clear goals that they can kind of break down into smaller goals so that they can start to think about, like, okay, so this is where I want to be a year from now. I want to lose 15 pounds, or I want to change careers, or I want to get into a relationship, or whatever it is. And if you have that in mind, then you can start to think, okay, so what do I have to do in the next 6 months, the next 3 months, this week, and then today? Like, what do I do today to start moving toward that goal? Mm-hmm. And what I find people do that throws them off more than anything else is they fail to protect time. So they'll say, like, this is what I'm going to do today. I'm going to work out for, you know, half an hour, which is great, right? But if they don't say, like, it's going to be between 2:30 and 3, then it becomes like, I hope I protect some time, you know, but somehow the locus of control becomes outside of them instead of them just deciding. And I think once you decide and you intend to get something done, then it gets done. And that's the piece we're missing. We're just hoping, like, you know, I hope that I get where I want to go. I hope I get that promotion. I hope I lose that weight, you know, and hope I love, but it is not enough to get you where you need to go. You at some point have to set intention that is abundantly clear and act on that intention.
Realistically, John, is it okay for a person to say, I'm going to set a set of goals for the day, for the week, for the month, for the year, for the 10 years, for the 20 years? Like, what are your intervals that you want in your head to be playing off of to keep yourself on a schedule?
You know, I think it's great to have when you get to 10 to 20 years, I always figure you're looking at dreams. You're looking at aspirations, like big, big time. I think you have to break those down into something that's manageable, too. And you want wins. You know, I find that people get discouraged if they can't break something down small enough where within a week they can't look back and say, okay, that was good. I'm moving ahead. But if you say, like, you know, I want to host the Tonight Show in 20 years, to say, you know, like, oh, yeah, this was a good move this week to get there, there's just not enough objective evidence in there to get you where you want to go. You know what I mean? So I think you have to break it down into smaller pieces than that. I think it's great to have dreams and aspirations that are big, and I encourage everybody to do that. But you have to have goals that get you there, and they have to be broken down, you know?
All right. So what if you're the queen of ADHD and you have a difficult time making long-term goals, but then just one day I wake up and say, I'm going to do this today. I don't like to plan ahead. I just like to wake up and say, I'm going to do this today. Can you set goals once you're already starting to do something you enjoy, or do you have to pre-plan everything? I'm not a good planner.
No, I don't think you have to pre-plan everything, but then I think the good feeling is going to come from what you did today. And it's not going to fit in a bigger picture of what you're going to achieve a year from now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I know it's really hard, especially when you have an attention issue, to think like really, really long term. And in that situation, I always encourage my patients to like document. I want you to document like specifically what you want to do, because once you've got it down on paper, there's this degree of commitment to it that you don't have when you just say it. Because when
That's
you just
true.
Say it in an hour, then it's kind of like, okay, it's out there, but you can renege on that tomorrow, and it's raining today, so I can't really get out there and run. You know, like you can make
excuses
so readily. And the excuses come easier when, and this is what gets in a lot of people's way, when people don't feel entitled to what they want.
Yeah.
So oftentimes people say, like, you know, I want to be, I want to run a marathon a year from now. This happened with a man I was working with a couple of years ago. He was overweight at the time, had never run in his whole life. And I remember he took his running shoes that he had just bought, put them on the ottoman between us and said, I have no idea even what to do with these things. Yeah. You know, and he started with these really small goals of just walking around the block, walking around two blocks. And he figured, well, if I can walk around two blocks, I can walk around six blocks. And if I can then jog around two blocks,
right,
eventually I can run 26.2 miles. And he eventually did get there over the course of 1 year.
What a smart way to do it.
Right? Yeah. So he had to break it way, way down into something where he created little wins for himself every single day.
But that helps you want to proceed then with your goals.
Yeah.
Because I'm impatient. I want, like, it's all or nothing with me. So to me, small steps are like big deal. But then after you finish that step, you're like, wow, I did that. I can do this now.
Yeah. And there's that feel good, right? There's that win.
Accomplishment,
like, you know,
is what it is.
Right. And it's empowering. And it makes you really believe, okay, I think I can get where I want to go. And the other thing you have to be prepared for is where you want to go, and this is going to sound so counterintuitive, might not be where you want to go. So you get this vision for a year from now.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you work your way toward it, you might realize, I don't know if I really want that. I might want something different. And I think you have to be flexible enough to shift your goals as you go, as long as you're working toward them.
And that doesn't come across as a failure. Like, say, for instance, let's use the marathon again.
Right.
And then as the two blocks become six blocks, become a couple of miles that you're walking, and you're like, I don't have any desire to do that anymore. That's not a failure. It's just your goals have changed.
Your goals have changed. You've made a shift. And you've delved into that world. So you have a feeling for what it is, and you might recognize, like, okay, I'm willing to commit a certain amount of my time and my life and my energy to this, but I'm not really willing to commit, 3 hours a day to it. So I'll make this part of my life, but this isn't going to be my primary goal for the year. And then oftentimes people will find something else because sometimes this goal setting stuff is addictive because the wins feel good.
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean?
Like each win feels pretty good.
I keep on my desk at home, there's a to-do list that always has a dozen or 15 things on it. And a lot of days I'll look at it and I'll go, I'm going to get three or four of these done guaranteed. If I get more done, that's a plus. But three or four must be crossed off the list today. And when I'm crossing them off, it's weird because it's just it's a pencil on paper. But I'm like, I pulled it off.
The to-do lists are so gratifying, and especially if you break them down, right?
Yeah.
I mean, into something like, make that phone call, like write that paragraph, something that not like finish the book,
Right.
And then you can really feel like, okay, every day I'm taking these little steps.
And it's a plus. All right, Dr. John Duffy is here. If you want to chime in, 312-981-7200 is the way to do it. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're talking with Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist. You can listen to his podcast, Undo Anxiety. It's at WGNplus.com, or you can find it on iTunes or where you find your other podcasts. Also, go to his website, drjohnduffy.com.
I just heard his Cajun broadcast, Undo Anxiety, and it was spectacular, John. Loved every
Why
minute
you in
of
marketing?
It.
I'm glad you enjoyed that.
Oh,
I'm
was
trying
that
to
good?
Expand the cultural limits of my podcasting.
I think that was the first time I actually heard the audience groan.
<I know. laughs>
Like, through the radio.
Right. How did that happen?
All right. I heard on the news today, we all know about this Facebook Live attack. A Chicago girl was sexually assaulted. Word came out that this young victim, I believe 14 years old, was told that a pit bull was going to attack her if she did not participate in this. And it turns out 40 people were viewing this on Facebook Live. Bill and I were talking about this off the air. Until this came out, you stumble across something on Facebook that you're not planning to see. At first, you'd think, this isn't even real.
Sure.
This is some weird stage thing. And then it's like, if I know you finally realize I got to do something about it, but like, who do you call? I mean, I guess knowing this now, I would call 911 and say, here's the screen name of the person. I see the page. This is disturbing. Maybe you should look into it. We all need to kind of help each other.
Right. And that's probably kind of the next phase of taking care of each other, is recognizing when something goes on online and it really rings that it's happening, that we need to do something to take care of each other. Part of what prevents us from doing that is just the fact that it's one removed because we're watching it on a screen as opposed to seeing it on the street. But you might remember from Psych 101 this idea called the bystander effect, where if there's a few other people around and nobody else is doing anything or one person's doing something, then you feel kind of licensed to step back.
And not get
involved.
And not
act, right? So the press now, I think, has to be, yeah, you have to act. You have to think about, would I regret not acting on this, not calling 911, not reaching out to some kind of authority? And I think you're right, Wendy. We're in a new age where we really need to take care of each other because, you know, people who perpetrate this kind of thing are clever and they're going to find new ways to challenge us and shock us. And if we don't do something to counteract that in real time, then it just opens the door to more of this.
But what's missing in a person's psyche where they think that doing something like this is A, acceptable, and B, that they can get away with it? How does that play in?
I think part of it is that wish for infamy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, that I'm going to be seen and I'm going to be known.
Yeah.
And some people feel so desperate and hopeless. And I'm not looking to feel a whole lot for the people who perpetrated
right.
this.
That and they're young boys,
yeah,
some of them.
Yep,
it's
yep.
very disturbing.
It is. But it's probably been, to some extent, modeled for them. You know, maybe not online, but sometimes, you know what I mean? There's this kind of like, there's this mimicry that young boys often do of older guys, you know? And if they see like, oh, wow, somebody got a whole bunch of attention for doing this awful thing, then I might be willing to do that. It doesn't necessarily address the idea of the fact that it's an awful thing,
yeah.
you know, and that's the disturbing part is we don't know exactly what's driving these guys. You
yeah.
know, that's something that my field is kind of scrambling to figure out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right.
There was another video going around. I think I saw it on Facebook, and it was a fake mugging that took place in an elevator. There was a guy choking another guy. So when the elevator door opened and innocent bystanders were there when the door opened, you could see their reactions. Some people like scream in horror and ran away.
Mm-hmm.
One guy, you know, jumped into the elevator and said, "Hey, what are you doing?" and tried to break them apart. They showed another woman who, like, almost like rubbed her eyes, like, is this for real?
Yeah.
And she had her cell phone, so it looked like she was calling authorities. But it's weird to see the majority of people just kind of walked away.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're hoping somebody else is taking care of it. Because it's ugly and they don't know what to do. They don't want to get hurt themselves.
And
right?
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Bill, we've talked about this before. If you saw someone being attacked, you would jump in and try and break it up. Thinking of if my husband did that, I would be mad at him because what if he ended up getting hurt or killed trying to save someone else?
Right.
I know he would go out a hero, but then I wouldn't have him anymore. So I guess, if anything, you should definitely call 911. These people who the door opened on were alone, so it's not the bystander effect. They didn't think
nope.
someone else is going to – maybe they thought someone would come upon this later, but it's happening right then and there.
Right, right. So there might not even be time to call
right.
911. And it's interesting because I think some people's impulses are like yours, Bill, where it's like, I'm going to do something about this
yeah.
right now. I'm not going to let this stand. I think I have that same press, like, you know, well, we don't have the luxury of time, so
right.
we've got to act on this. And I think what we want to do is foster more of that action in people instead of, like, you know, just setting back and becoming observers. Because I think we're becoming, in a way, because we have so many screens in front of us, this nation of observers. We're kind of like, you know, and so things are kind of one removed from us all the time. Even in the elevator, you know, you got this woman rubbing her eyes as if like, well, this doesn't seem real, you know,
right.
and so I don't even know what to do about it. But I think the more we decide, I'm going to do something, I'm going to dial that number or step in and intervene, even though I'm putting myself in some kind of risk, then I think we stem the tide. Because you're right, Wendy, more of this stuff is happening, and it's not happening over the course of years that we're seeing more of it. This is happening in the course of weeks, right? I mean, a month ago, we wouldn't have been talking about this.
Yeah.
Anna wants to jump in on the conversation we're having. Anna, we don't have a lot of time, but we're here with Dr. John Duffy. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I'll be real quick. It's terrible when someone just like stands by and lets it happen. But at the same time, sometimes these situations can bring out the very best in people. Like, I won't give out his name or where it happened, but one time there's this one bully at my high school, and he was really nasty and everything, and nobody really liked him. And then all of a sudden he caught one day he caught a teacher in a, shall we say, compromising position with a younger student, and he went ballistic on the guy. And he's like, as it turned out, he really turned around, because as it, what people found out was apparently he had lost a little sister to a predator.
Wow.
And so that is like, he may have, like, afterward, he just like really straightened out, but maybe because he finally got, like, he felt like he got some say in it, and he found like he, maybe like having finally managed to save someone, he felt like he didn't have to hate himself anymore so much. So as horrible as it was, he protected that freshman girl, and the teacher went to prison for the rest of his life.
Doesn't that prove that there is good in all of us? It's just whether or not we tap into
like,
it.
Everyone was like, while he wasn't a nice guy, and at first, and he was like, he was a bully, he was never actually physically aggressive towards any like of the students, really, particularly the girls. And now everyone understood why, because he had like, it had really messed up his family. And it's like, and I can see why, but it's like, once seeing that, he snapped and he went like totally ballistic, and the guy wound up, he put the guy in this, and this teacher was bigger than he was, and he put the guy in he put him in intensive care, and like everyone was like really shocked, because this teacher was really well liked, but apparently she wasn't the first, but apparently at the same time she was apparently the last.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that, Anna.
Yeah.
Are you on spring break or something?
Actually, I'm in college now, so.
But you remember this.
Oh, yes. Everyone remembered.
Thank you for calling.
Have a good week.
She sounded young to me.
Yeah.
Well, if we just do something, you know, even screaming or making a loud noise will disrupt something that's happening.
That's something I was thinking of when Anna was talking, is it sometimes doesn't take much, because, you know, bullies, you know, they're not as courageous and brave as we think they are. And sometimes it just takes words to just get them to back off.
So
and,
true.
Yeah.
John, thanks.
Thank
you, guys. Appreciate it. It's Dr. John Duffy. Listen to his podcast. Read his book, would you? It's Bill and Wendy. It's WGN.